Welcome to the Inclusive Leader Spotlight, a podcast that showcases leaders who are making a positive impact in the workplace by leveraging diversity, equity, and inclusion. I am your host, Juan Taveras, founder and CEO of DEI ProFinder. Our business is dedicated to fostering connections between business leaders and right-fit DEI professionals. We are on a mission to demystify diversity, equity, and inclusion, and we're doing it one conversation at a time. We believe that DEI is not only a moral and social obligation, but also a business imperative that can create positive and engaging workplaces, boost productivity, and drive innovation. Join us as we explore the power of DEI and its potential to transform the workplace and society at large. Welcome to another episode of the Inclusive Leader Spotlight. Today, I am super excited to have Jody Dechen, co-founder and managing partner of Orange Grove Consulting, joining us today. So Jody is an organizational consultant and educator with a foundation in operational change management. She is a clinical professor of management and academic MBA program director at Suffolk University. She has worked in organizational development for over 25 years, transforming the way people work at small and large companies. Jody is also a published author, a keynote speaker, and a board director. So welcome, Jody.
Hi, Juan. It's fun to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yes, thank you for being here. I'm so excited for our conversation and to dig into your unique approach with Orange Grove Consulting into the DEI work, and also to learn more about your personal passion and what brought you to this work. But before we dive into all that fun stuff, for our audience, who are you and what do you do?
Yeah, so it's so interesting because we did in our first book, we did a research on women's career trajectory. Then what we found was that almost everybody has a zigzag, and I have a zigzag too. So my origin story is I started as a computer programmer. Mm. So I have a very big tech background and a lot of operations in that too, a lot of automating operations and doing all those things. Then, of course, I sort of morphed my way into academia and research. And as we started doing that, we started to understand, my business partner and I started working together and started realizing that we had this real problem around women in leadership, and there weren't enough women getting there. So we studied that. And then we started to realize that this was actually a systems problem. And a lot of it had to do with organizational systems, as well as what, you know, internal systems around women that they were holding assumptions about themselves. And then we started realizing this wasn't just a women problem. This was actually affecting a lot of other people. And so this is where the DEI starts coming in, because we start realizing there's all this diversity that's actually having this same problem. And so when you literally start looking at these organizational systems, you start to see that the slice of people that are getting through, behavior is so narrow that it's like, wait a second, this isn't serving anyone. Mm. So that's really the way our work has morphed. And so I did a lot of the nitty gritty work earlier in my career and earlier in the business. And now I tend to do more of the strategy work.
That's very cool. Oh, you've shared so much that we are excited to unpack here. I mentioned earlier, right before we started recording, that as an HR leader, I geek out on processes and systems.
Okay,
right?
We're going to geek out together.
Because that is so much of where this work lives, and how people experience workplaces is through those established processes and systems. Okay, so let's dive into Orange Grove Consulting and how you're a co-founder and how that came about.
So it was really interesting. My co-partner Kelly Watson and I came together. There was a third group called Third Path. And so Third Path was really all about, how do we create workplaces that are different, that are actually serving human needs? Mm. It's a nonprofit. And so we came together. She had these working groups, and we came together as part of that. We did some partnership work. And so Kelly and I started talking to each other. It was like, oh my gosh, like we just click, 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 click. And then all of a sudden we decided, hey, let's write a book. And then now we've been business partners for over a decade. We've written two books together. Now we're writing an academic paper together. So we just work together. That's she awesome. Is, you know, one of my favorite people in the world. So that's how but it was very serendipitous how we met.
That's so cool. Yeah. And that you get to work with somebody that you're so aligned with. That's
my favorite times of the week are when we have a call together.
That's how you know. That's how you know you have a good business partner, when you want to spend more time with them. Okay. So as you know, part of our mission here at DEI ProFinder and with our podcast is to demystify the DEI landscape, because especially right now, there's a lot of misunderstanding and just confusion, general confusion around what DEI is. So let's talk about, from your perspective, what are some of those key benefits that, the research has been done, but I think it's always so good for us to have more and more reminders of what the benefits are of DEI when it's done well.
I think I'll step back a little bit because I think you talk about myths, and I think one of the most important myths that we need to debunk is this whole idea of DEI is a slice, and we're like supporting this small slice of people so that they can make their career way. And that's not, I don't think that's it at all. I think what I love about the DEI work is that it's about inclusion. And when we talk about inclusion, it's really about making our work systems work for everybody. So I always use this example because we've seen it over and over and over again. So we use a lot of data, a lot of operational analysis to see what's going on in the talent process. And there's this process, and I even did some research on this as well. It's called developmental assignment. So these are all the precursor steps that people take before they get the promotion. Well, nobody's measuring this. Nobody's tracking this. Nobody's even identifying what these steps are, who's getting them, how they're getting them, how it's being measured, how successful they are. So it's like, who's hypo? Oh, well, they get together at a round table and say, well, this person's hypo and this person. So it's all this stuff that you would never do if you were creating a new product or a new strategy. It's just let's wing it. And so as we start to look at this, we realize what we need to do is let's put some data and measurement on this stuff. Let's define it. And then you can decide whether or not you've got differential treatment based on people's demographic groups. But right now, you don't even know. All you know is that who's getting through the pipeline, they all look the same, or they even think the same. Like, I remember one person that I spoke with, a senior executive in finance, he was telling me that he goes, I can't hire one more person from ABC University because they all think alike. I need some different thinking on my team. And I think that illustrates it, right? So he was trying to think about what he needed on his team, but couldn't measure it, couldn't articulate. He could articulate what he didn't want. So there's just so much lack of specificity, lack of concreteness, and lack of data. So I think DEI, in my opinion, is about let's systematize talent management, and then we can start to tell the story legitimately about what is working and what is not. And we can look at the differential treatment that people are getting based on different demographic groups. And it could be anything. It could be neurodiversity. It could be race. It could be gender. It could be age. There's lots of different, it could be political affiliation. So there's lots of different things that we could measure. But right now, we can't measure anything because we don't have any data.
Because we don't have it. Gosh, that's so it's so true. And when you think about it, it's such a simple solution there, right? Like it, I mean, not the implementation piece. That might take some
Yeah,
time
that's the
and
hard
change
part.
management. Yeah. But I think when you view it, and I love the example you shared there that we would never do this as a business with launching a new product or like. Well, so why is it that people, systems, and processes are so
Exactly.
random at times? And
Yes. And that
then,
person's just like me. Therefore, I'm going to pick them to come on the client presentation with us. Oh, why? Why don't you prepare and think about it more systematically? But it's a real mindset shift, a real mindset shift, which is shocking. First time I saw it, I was like, seriously?
It's hard to believe. Like what, and the beauty is though, once you see it. You can't unsee it, right? Like
Can't
it's
see
so
it. You
that
can't.
works in our favor. I think there's as
Right.
change management folks, we get to leverage that. And it's like, okay, here's like when we make it plain, then people can start to understand it. And going back to something else that you mentioned, as far as the data, I don't think you said this, but I heard, especially in talent systems,
Yes.
it's about like rubrics, right?
Yes.
And being really specific about what it is that we are trying to achieve or what it is that we're looking for in a specific individual or a specific job level. Because so often, and this is in my own experience too, I've seen this with the lack of that structure, all you have is perception. All you have is, well, I've been here 5 years and I've worked really hard, so I deserve it. Or anyway, any number of examples you can fit in there.
Exactly.
And that's so hard to manage and navigate when it's
Yes.
every
Yeah, it's really difficult. I think it's what's interesting is that, there's a lot of rubrics out there. So you got the nine box evaluation, and a lot of the top talent companies have really done significant work in this space, and we're not seeing it trickle down as much. But I think the real issue is that The rubrics, first we need the data to start seeing where the gaps are, and then we can start finding the rubrics. We know what good performance looks like at a high level. The hard part is, I'll give you an example. So I was talking to somebody today who's managing a person whose work that the manager doesn't know about, right? So the manager doesn't understand the work of the person that's working for them. And so it's very hard to evaluate, like, how much time should it take? So these kinds of things need to be documented, and we need to agree. But then at the same time, a lot of people don't want to document it. Like, oh God, seriously, I have to tell you how much I'm going to estimate how much time I'm going to do it. And so that's where the implementation challenge comes, because some of the things, in order to document things, you've got to really break the work down. And some people feel like that's micromanagement, or they feel like it's too tedious, or why do I have to do this? Just trust me. So there's all this other stuff that gets wrapped on top of it, which sort of puts gunk in the system and makes it harder to measure.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I another thing to consider in those processes is like the different work styles, right? So
Definitely.
some folks, especially depending on how long they've been doing something, it's what they're doing is almost intuitive. It's like they just know how to do
Exactly.
it. But if you ask them to write it down or to document or to create some kind of SOP or something like that,
They
it's like, oh,
can't
I
do
don't
it.
know, I just do it.
I know. And then you have the other problem where, people rely so heavily on their work description. It's like, wait a second, can we have a little bit of flexibility there? Because the work is ch work's changing so dynamically. Like, just because it's not your job description, it's okay. So it's like, we want to document, and at the same time, we don't want to be married and tied to it. We need some lack of rigidity. So it's really this, it's a very difficult, that's why it's so difficult to implement. But there's another reason it's difficult to implement. And I had this experience today, actually. So I'm doing payroll. And actually, I had this experience last week. And one of my employees is going on maternity leave. Well, my payroll system is transactional. It doesn't have history. So if I put that person in as maternity leave, it deletes whatever it was before. So I literally have to have another spreadsheet to track the history. And so if you think about it, when you think about life events like maternity or marriage or something like that, or graduation from college, whatever, these are life events that can actually be quite useful in our talent process. But if our systems don't even hold the data, we're stuck. So it's like these antiquated things that it's really legacy. There's a lot of legacy systems
Interesting.
out there. So I think a part of this is really about, and then there's a third element I think that makes it difficult. And I know we're wandering across multiple questions, but another area that I think makes it difficult is a lot of my experiences. A lot of times HR is assumed to be just about people. And many of the people in HR are somewhat afraid of data. And so there needs to be a blending of data is a key ingredient to making sure we've got inclusive workplaces. In fact,
Absolutely.
it's the only way I believe that we're going to be able to do it, because the perception work isn't working. We know that.
Yeah.
We've
That's
got to be able to change the systems.
yeah, it's such a okay, so many good things here because it's the balance, right, is so
Yes.
important when it comes to documenting, but also keeping some flexibility in there
Yeah.
for nuance. But also from an HR perspective, when you mention the data piece, I think there's the qualitative and
Yes.
the quantitative, right? So the people piece is like you want to keep that the giving the data the context and the color
Yes.
and getting that real anecdotal information from staff members. You want to keep those lines open, but you also need to create a baseline for us to what are we what are we where are we at now and where are we trying to go and how are we measuring that, right?
Right.
And then the other piece that I'm thinking about as the reason why data is so important is transparency. I think when you go back to the perception thing, it's like who what is reality? I don't know. Like we all have a
He said,
different
she said, they said, and now all of a sudden it's like, I
right. It's
don't
like
know what's true.
what's accurate. But
Yeah.
when you have data and it can, not always it's not always objective, but most of the time it's depending on how you collect it and you share it and you say, okay, so here's our baseline, here's our starting point, here's where we're
Exactly.
trying to go. Then you get
Exactly.
more, yeah, and that's part of that DI work.
Yeah, so we've been doing a lot more of that, so that we help people do DEI assessments, so we can actually get, and we do the qual and the quant, because the quant tells you a really nice story, but the qual gives you the nuance. You actually start to see some of the reasons why things are happening, so you can pinpoint the change areas. And then we've actually started incorporating this into engagement surveys, so that then when you do your annual engagement survey, you're actually doing an annual inclusion survey as well. So you have this whole ongoing basis that people are not used to doing, and you can really track what's happening. And then you supplement that with your HR data. Now you've got a pretty cool picture.
Oh yeah.
Of what's happening.
Yeah. That's really cool. Okay. So let's talk about that, because engagement surveys, I'm sure you hear this often. They're sort of, some people love them, some people hate them. And because my take is, as an HR leader, you gain a lot of great insight.
Yes.
From engagement surveys. Two things though, that I am in favor of is doing them more frequently. So the annual is often not frequent enough for us to get like real time data, especially because depending on the size of the organization, it might take several weeks or months to analyze and you know, do something without all that information. So if we're doing it more bite-sized, more frequently, then we get into a cadence of actual change and moving the needle. What are your thoughts on that?
I think there's a long-term change process, and then there's a short-term change process. So for example, if you take the long-term, manager relationships are typically more medium to long-term. And so doing a pulse check might not give you that longer piece, and it might take you longer to actually coach that manager to become a better manager or work with a team dynamic. Those things take longer to manage. So you need to do an annual or maybe a biannual, like once every 2 years, one to capture some of the longer term trends. But then the short term trends, like you have a new policy and it's causing all this chaos and people are really upset about it. Well, that you can capture really quickly with a pulse survey. So I think you have to think about it as short term, medium term, and long term. And then the other thing that I would love to see more of is, I think a lot of the actions that I see coming out of an engagement survey tend to be more, here, this is our current state, and here are all the rah-rah things that we're doing to make everybody feel better. And I think that those are important. Clearly, people's morale is key. But I think those surveys tell a much deeper, richer story about the organizational dynamics in terms of like reporting, power dynamics, how effective teams are working, relationships between the work and the implementation of work, you know, the work content, and then how people are working together. Like, there's a rich, rich story there that I think we can take a lot more action on. By taking more action on that, so for example, you see in a particular team that there's chaos in the team. All right, do an intervention. Let's go figure out what's going on. Let's do some teamwork right there, and we can fix it right now. And that I don't see as much. I don't see as much of the follow-up, because oftentimes the reporting is done at such an aggregate level that it's really like state of the world, which is fine, but I don't think it's enough.
No, I agree. I completely agree. And some of the best leaders that I've had the pleasure of working with are very proactive in that sense. They don't wait for that annual survey. Yeah. If they are hearing from their team members that, to use your example, like a new policy is causing issues or there's concerns about it, then they're going to take the time to like quickly poll their team and say, hey, what's going on? What's bothering you? And then they take that to HR as opposed to waiting for this future survey that may or may not include questions about that.
I hope that more companies will invest in this people piece, you know, especially with AI coming, and AI is going to automate a lot of stuff. And so what's left is the people. So I'm really, really hoping that companies will invest more in this people side of it. I'm worried that because they didn't do it when remote work showed up. I'm a little like there's these opportunities we have to really rethink work. And there's this hesitancy against it. And I don't understand why, because there's no hesitancy at all to create new products or to create new strategies or to go into a new market. None. Yeah. And yet there is around the people. And I have not cracked that nut. I don't know why.
Yeah. I mean, so I'll throw out some ideas that just came up as you were sharing that, because I completely agree. I think the people side often just doesn't get the attention that it deserves. And so two thoughts come to mind. I think part of it, at least, has to do with the ROI not being direct, right, to the bottom line.
Exactly.
It is an investment that will take time for you to see the fruit of that labor.
Right.
But there's that disconnect, and it's like, well, I'm going to invest X number of dollars on this now.
Yeah.
And may or may not see this anyway. So that's one thing. But the other piece too is going back to the change management process, right? I think that is in itself part of the challenge, that it just takes time for all of us to embrace change. So, and it's happening so fast.
Well, the AI is happening really fast, I think, and I think that's difficult. But I do think that there's so much opportunity as we think about, well, and by the way, AI needs data, so it's not going to work without data anyway. But I think with the ROI, and one of the reasons that we can't do the ROI is because we have no data, right? So we're in this infinite loop. We can't see the impact. One of the exercises that we do, some of our work with leaders, is we actually ask them to quantify their own ROI. Like, what is the value that you are bringing to your organization? And we actually ask them to use numbers. And they're back of the napkin numbers, but you can actually do quite an extensive Excel spreadsheet on it. And then all, because clearly you're doing adding value or you wouldn't be working there anymore. And so having people think in this data mindset to realize, yes, I actually am adding value. And it's not just this esoteric, of course I'm adding value. No, I am working, you know, I've solved these three problems. And as a result of solving these three problems this week, I prevented this crisis, this system from failing. You know, I mean, you can quantify this stuff.
Absolutely.
And then if you're able to articulate that to your manager, then you start to create, and then create this across the culture. Now you've got this articulation of value, of the people value.
Oh, I love that. I love that. I remember a coach of mine many years ago, and this is sort of like one of those things that you just it just sticks with you and it changes the way that you view everything. I remember I was venting to them about my work at the time, as you do with your coach, and they challenged me to think about what you just said. What how do you quantify the value that you add to the organization? And if you can't do that, then you have something, you got to really think about that. Like
You really
how
think about
you
it.
were hired for to serve this organization in a very specific way. Are you doing that? Are you or, and better yet, are you going above and beyond that? And if you're not, then those are the questions that you need. Like maybe do you have the resources that you need? Do you have the
Exactly.
the data and the re et cetera, but is it but it could also be like a mindset or your own
Yeah.
change process that needs to be adjusted. So yeah, viewing ourselves individually as thinking about our work as adding value to the organization,
Yeah.
right? It's so important.
And it's not, I'm so busy, which is today's
Yeah.
favorite
Look at my
mantra.
calendar. Yeah.
I'm so busy, therefore I must be out of it. No, that's not what we're talking
Yeah.
about.
It's moving the mission forward, right?
Moving the mission forward.
Yeah.
And then if somebody's not aligned with the mission, then that's a whole nother thing. Like
Right.
quantifying your value can actually show you, oh my gosh, actually, I don't really like the value that I provided. And then you rethink it.
Yeah.
But so many people are just like crunching and crunching. And I actually think this is an organizational problem. We've created so much work that we've lost some of the joy in the work. And so we do lose motivation and we lose productivity as a result of this.
Yeah, 100%. And I think w some of the workplaces that experience a lot of success when they leverage the diversity of their workforce is because they're creating those opportunities for people to have fun, right?
Exactly.
And I'm just talking about the parties or happy hours or whatever, but it's more about
Have fun with the work.
enjoying the work, exactly. Yeah,
Yeah.
which means they're using their skills and their talents and not
Exactly.
just living in a
So
job
much more joy.
description. Yeah.
And you and I both know it just fills your life with joy when you enjoy it. We spend a lot of time at work. When you're enjoying your work, like having this conversation with you, it's just really joyful. It's fun, you know?
Yeah.
It's like both of our expertise areas, and we're having a good time.
Yes,
It's good
absolutely.
stuff.
Yeah. And that's what I love to see when we stop seeing individuals for by their title or this is your job. It's more about you are a whole person and
Yes.
you have other interests and passions and abilities. How else can you add, can you bring those into the to the world, to the business
Right.
world? Yeah.
And it's so interesting. I'll never forget what popped into my head as we're having this discussion is that I can't remember the researcher who did this time study, but she worked with a consulting firm. And they did this time study and they compared a couple different groups where they took the night off. So they stopped work at 6 and then people could have their own life, right? And the productivity gains were just significant for the compared to people that didn't. And the other thing they found was people enjoyed their work more because they actually realized what they were doing and why they were doing it. And it wasn't just like, let's work till midnight because that's what we should do. And so there was this much more of a balance, you know, like if we need to figure out, or we need to have more engagement surveys that capture that kind of data, because that kind of data is where you make serious systems change that benefit the people and they benefit the company.
Absolutely. Yeah. It makes so much sense. I think when you have the ability to spend, like, that makes me think of compartmentalization, right? So it's
Exactly.
like, I've got my work time, I've got my family time, I've got my alone time, and whatever it is, whatever that mix is for you, then you are filling your cup in all of those ways, as opposed to just grinding there's a diminishing returns on that,
Oh,
right? Like,
totally. We know that data. That data has been
absolutely.
out there for a long time, and yet
Yeah.
we don't see it.
You forget it. Like, being busy feels good. In some backwards way, right?
I know.
Oh, awesome. Okay. So I do want to make sure we talk about your firm's
Sure.
core offers and services, because I know a lot of our listeners, anyone who might be just getting started in this work or might be missing that data piece in their DEI strategy. Yeah, let's talk about that. What are some of the services that you offer?
So we really have three different buckets. So our first bucket, of course, is the training, because so in our change management model, what you have to do is you have to train the people, you have to change mindsets and train people, you got to change the processes, you got to shift the culture, and then you got to change the incentive structure. So that's a complete change process that you have to do. So our services really align with that. So the training is the core part of it. And so we do all sorts of training, you know, the traditional DEI training. We also do leadership training. We have a whole inclusive leadership series because we think leadership in the 21st century requires you to think as an inclusive leader. So, for example, one of our modules in there is about how to run an effective meeting. And it's not you need an agenda. Yes, okay, yes, you need an agenda, but we're talking about how do you facilitate discussion so that you're not, you know, a stage on the stage type thing. That you're actually facilitating a collaborative discussion. So we train them because we feel like so many of these leaders have just been put into their positions with very little support. And so we look at it in that way. And then our second area is really all about the analytics. And what we have a bunch of different products. So we have our engagement survey, which includes the inclusive aspects of it. We have a DEI survey. We also look at HR data and do analysts. We have a pay equity, or I should say a pay assessment product. So we can look at pay and we use quartiles. So everything that we do is statistically valid and we use R-based. So it's all coded. So it's a pretty sophisticated tool that we use to do this analysis. And then the outcome of that is a pretty intensive report that really shows you all the different areas. And we have a 12-section scorecard so we can evaluate how people are going from promotion to hiring to culture to work life. There's 12 different categories. So we can evaluate you based on this. And that assessment includes HR data. We do qualitative interviewing of a percentage of people within the organization, and then we do a survey. And we usually get anywhere between 60 to 90% response rate. It really just depends on the size of the organization and because we typically ask for support from the top. So we typically ask the CEO or somebody at that C-suite level to be the champion of the survey. So that yields us good results. So it's very statistically strong. And then we do a lot of work around how do we internalize this? How do we take this information and what do we do with it? So we do a lot of work around that, which leads us to the third bucket, which is really about strategizing and consulting. And that's really like, where is it that you want to be? So sometimes we start with the data so we can get a present state analysis. Sometimes we start with the strategy, the visioning, and say, who is it that you want to be? For example, one organization we looked at. They really wanted to be, it was a construction firm, and they really wanted to be a leader in diversity. They wanted to be the place that people go to get a great career in construction. And so you had the vision, and then you look at the current state, and then you create a strategy with them on how do you get there. It's pretty standard stuff. And then we do a lot of just, and then we do the consulting around that change management implementation process. Because one of the things that we found in our over a decade of work is that. To your point, HR is typically way busy. We'll use that word again, but they have a lot of multitude of competing interests and goals. And so one of the things that we found is that, and they don't always come at it with a consulting viewpoint or an operations viewpoint. So sometimes us bringing in that expertise can really help strengthen the implementation piece. And we run it like a like in any implementation. So what we always joke about is that we run it as if you're doing, like if you're implementing a software system, that's how we think about this.
Oh, I love that.
It's a change management process. It change is the whole piece, but it's like you're creating something new. And so that's how we have to look at this.
Yeah. I just pictured like project management.
Exactly.
Schedules and Gantt charts. And
exactly. Oh, yeah. You'd get one of those. If you were a client, you would get one of those.
Okay. No, I do want to highlight. So thank you for sharing that, because that it sounds so robust and holistic, but I want to highlight just how much happens before implementation. And this is where, that's so important. So you have to do first get alignment, right? So part of that training is like, let's just get everyone on the same page.
Exactly.
Awareness of the issues and all the things.
Right.
And then assessment. So where are we now? Where are we trying to go? What are the gaps? And then you strategize and implement. Because so often, I don't know if you experienced this, but when folks come to me for support with their DEI strategies, they think they know what it is that they want to implement.
Yeah.
I'm like, what? And then I start to ask them questions, and it becomes clear that, oh, you haven't done an assessment. You haven't asked. Yeah.
You don't know where you are.
You don't know where you are. Yeah.
We call that throwing spaghetti at the wall and seeing what you get. I mean, that's the old saying, right?
Yeah.
Because there's 1,000 different ideas out there. You can go Google and you'll get thousands of ideas. But I'll give you an example. So with one of the clients that we work with, it was a services firm, professional services firm, and they had problems with their, not so much with their hiring. Their hiring was actually pretty good in terms of their diversity. But after that, it was like from post-hire all the way up to the top, they just struggled.
Yeah.
And when you looked underneath it, what you saw was there were so many difficult challenges around the talent process itself. Because they were professional services, they were very focused on the work. Their work was outstanding and extraordinarily high quality. But people don't always understand, especially a lot of people in professional services don't understand that, like, there's this whole management piece. Like, you've got to be able to manage the work.
Yeah.
It's not just about doing the work. And so change, so that particular company, it took us 2 years of work just to get people to buy in and understand the problem. Because they were so focused on the work. And so it totally depends on the company. Some companies, they get it. Oh, yeah, right. Got it. Let's go.
Mm-hmm.
They're the rare ones, I would say. Most people. So we usually see in between those two.
Those
two extremes.
Yeah, which I thank you for sharing that, because that's another point that I often try to make. This does not happen overnight, right? Any kind of change management and change process will take time. And to your point, it depends on where you're at, the size of the organization, and sort of the mindset of the leaders, but it'll always take time.
Well, so, I'll say too, sometimes people assume, because like sometimes you'll have some organizations that are very bought into core DEI concepts,
mm-hmm.
but they still have all these organizational and process problems.
Yep.
And so they're so bought in that they think they're in a really good place.
Yeah.
But they are terrible on this side, or they really need a lot of work to become effective. And so part of it is you even have to get buy-in there. Like, they're bought into this piece. Yes, we want inclusion, but they don't know how to measure it. They're not actually doing it. It's like, it's very, very interesting. Every company I'm finding is at a totally different place on the spectrum.
Yep, absolutely. And it's so nuanced. It's I think anytime there's a group of people, a community, a team, it's going to be nuanced, right? It's going to be completely unique and different. So that makes total sense. And I think as you were sharing that example, it made me think of the talk not matching the walk, you know? So I come across leaders that are so passionate about DEI, and they say all the right things, and they mean well, and they have this vision for what they want the organization to look like, but then their actions don't back that up. And it's because of that. They haven't done any of that work.
They haven't done the work, And that's, I think, the biggest challenge, I think. Because at the end of the day, what we're trying to do is build effective organizations that work for people and work for the organization. Like, everybody has a vested interest in that organization, either making revenue if it's a nonprofit, or making profit if it's profitable, if it's a for-profit, because that's the only way the company survives, to get our paychecks, right? So we all have a vested interest. But at the end of the day, let's make them better for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But that process, it sounds so wonderful, but that process is really hard work, and people have to be willing to do the changes. And I'll give you a very simple example. One leader that we worked with, we were talking about how he needed to become more consistent in his interviewing. He's like, I don't want to do that. I just talk to people and see what happens and see what I like. And we're like, yes, but then this is the impact of this. And so it was a negotiation.
Yeah.
Because that particular piece, he didn't want to change. He didn't want to change his behavior. Yeah. So then we had to talk to him and negotiate and figure out a way around it. And just takes time.
Yeah. Oh gosh, that's a good one. I have so many examples of that kind of.
Yeah.
This is just the way I do it because I prefer it, and not
Exactly.
realizing that it's actually having a negative impact on.
But you would never do that if your SEO went down. You need to fix that SEO.
That's a good one. Oh man. Well, Jody, like you said earlier, we can talk all day. I feel like. But as we bring our episode to a close here, I want to ask two last one question about, so sort of parting words of wisdom. What do you want to leave our listeners with? And then I'll ask you where folks can find you.
Sure. So the first thing I would say is, from a big picture, the biggest takeaway I can offer is that DEI is really about effective talent management. And this is going to be the way companies can compete. And so this is what it's about. Let's make our processes, let's make our people more trained, let's make our processes work for us and understand what's going on. That's the first big takeaway. Second big takeaway is, you can actually make some very simple changes right away. So one of the best examples that I always offer as a piece of advice is, in the next meeting that you're in, see who talks, see who doesn't, see if you can figure out ways to bring in the person that doesn't talk, see how you can collaborate more. Simple little tiny task, and make everybody in that meeting do the same thing. It's your meeting. So, like, try the little tiny things that actually work quite well in starting to implement these changes.
Ooh, I love that. Yeah, those are inclusive practices that
Exactly.
require a strategy. Just
Right.
you can just do them.
You can just do them. That's right.
Love it. So thank you so much for that. All right. So if any of our listeners want to learn more about you or get in touch, if they're
Definitely.
interested in working with your firm, how do they go about
So easiest way, of course, is email, because I seem to be on email all the time.
that?
Jodi, Jodi, at orangegroveconsulting.com. Orangegroveconsulting.com, just like you expect it to be spelled. I'm not on X as much as I used to be, but I am on LinkedIn a lot. So you can always LinkedIn me at Jodi Detchen. You can find me pretty easily. Just look me up, because I have an unusual last name. So those are the two best ways.
Beautiful. And I'll make sure that those links are in our show notes, so make it
Thank
easy
you.
for our folks to find you. And Jody, what a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Oh, such a pleasure, Juan. Thank you.
Yeah.
I really loved it. Let's do it again.
Let's do it again. Yes. All right.
Have
Until
a great
next
day.
time.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Inclusive Leader Spotlight. We hope that you're walking away with a better understanding of DEI and how you can bring it to life in your organization. If you are an inclusive senior level business leader who would like to be on this program, please visit DEIProfinder.com and click on the podcast tab to apply to be a guest. Also, if you know someone that would be a great guest, please send them to our website. If you enjoyed today's episode, would you consider sharing it on social media? You can find us by searching DEI Profinder on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, and X. Include the hashtag Inclusive Leader Spotlight, and we'll make sure to show you some love. We are regularly putting on new episodes and content, so to make sure you don't miss any episodes, go ahead and subscribe to our show on your favorite podcast listening app. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show and mean a lot to me and my team. Thank you again for listening and for your support of our mission to demystify diversity, equity, and inclusion. Together, we are exploring the power of DEI and its potential to transform the workplace and society at large. Until next time.